So, yeah, this is a description of some very applied G by E by M research that myself and John have had on the go for the last 5 years or so. To start with acknowledgement of co-authors, there's been quite a multidisciplinary team on this, as well as a lot of people that trials for us around Australia, and it's all funded by the Grains Research and Development Corporation in conjunction with CSIRO. So quickly to give a background on Australia's wheat production climate, John showed that map of where the wheat's actually grown, but I guess one critical issue is that it tends to be mostly semi-arid, so most of the wheat belt sits below the 300 and 600 millimetre rainfall isohyets, particularly in the south and the west, where I'll mainly be talking about. And the rainfall pattern's highly Mediterranean, so the majority of the rain falls during the cool winter wheat growing season. And traditionally in Australia, since about the turn of the 1900s, Australia has been not only upside down, but it's also been back to front, not just in our seasons, but we also plant spring wheat in autumn because our winters aren't particularly cold. We don't have winter kill. This just shows the climate for a location in the southern wheat belt at Kerrang, and you can see this real seasonality of rainfall here in the green. So the traditional practice is to wait till the first autumn rains and then plant in response to those. And then the wheat grows well during the cool winter months. And the tricky thing is to get it to flower in this little period here where you're coming out of a cool and wet winter and into the hot, dry spring. So trading off drought and heat risk versus frost risk. That all worked very well for 100 years or so, but in recent times the production climate has changed, and Svea Hochman has a very good paper using crop models to compare Australia's actual wheat yield with water-limited yield and look at the wheat gap. And the interesting finding from that is that Australia's water-limited yields, so its potential yields, have declined over the last since 1990. Our yield gap's actually closed, not because our achieved yields are getting better, but because the potential yields are reducing. So our climate has become more hostile to wheat production. And a lot of that is due to rainfall decline. And critically, most of that rainfall decline has come out of our autumn. So April and May, those months where we need rainfall in order to establish our spring wheat crops, that's where the rainfall's all come out of. So this paper here by Wenju Chai shows that across the southern hemisphere, south eastern Australia particularly, but also western Australia, the big wheat growing regions, has lost a lot of our April, May rainfall that we really needed to give us our autumn break, which is when growers would plant their wheat. The problem with that is that flowering time of wheat in Australia is extremely critical for yield, because we are balanced between that cool, wet winter and the hot, dry summer. There's really only a very narrow period in spring where our wheat crops can flower in order for their yield to be maximised. And John and I had a student, Bonnie Floor, who devised a way to identify these periods across the wheat belt, and this is an example here for Kerrang, that location I showed before, showing the relationship between flowering date and yield, and this was done using crop simulation. And you can see that there's a very tight optimal period where crops need to flower in order for their yield to be maximised, or you're losing yield to one of the abiotic stresses. So the problem is that we've got this tight little window in which wheat crops need to flower, and we've got this rainfall decline in autumn, and unfortunately that rainfall decline in autumn coincides with the period when we have to sow our spring wheats in order that they flower during that optimal window. So if we look here at the example of Kerrang, where our optimal flowering period's in September, in order to get our crop to flower in September, we need to be sowing our spring wheats, our fast developing spring wheats, where all our breeding effort has gone for the last 100 years, really over about a 2 week period at the end of April and the start of May, and that's the only sowing window we've got in order to maximise our yields, which unfortunately coincides with that period of rainfall decline. So while we were working on the water use efficiency initiative that John was talking about, we sort of came up with the idea, could we actually use the stored soil water that we were looking at saving through summer fallow weed control and the extra summer rain we've actually been getting, to move the sowing window earlier so we can start establishing on that rainfall instead of the April-May rainfall, or even just use some sort of wheat genotype, and particularly a winter wheat genotype, to spread the sowing window so there's more chance of actually getting a planting opportunity. So the key thing is that winter wheat flowering time is far more stable than spring wheat because it has that vernalisation requirement. Your flowering date happens over a much narrower range for a given spread of sowing dates than it does in spring wheats, even photo period sensitive ones. The problem was that very, very little breeding effort had been applied to winter wheats in Australia. Some had been developed for the higher rainfall areas, but certainly not for where most of the wheat has been grown. And no-milling quality cultivars were released from 2002 to 2017, so very little germplasm. And just to put that in context, about 114 fast to mid-fast spring wheat cultivars were released during that period. So what we were essentially proposing to do is that we'd go from this kind of current practice system here, where we have our fast spring wheat sown in May, grow through winter and flower in spring, to something like this, where we could push the sowing date back into the start of autumn or even the end of summer, extend our vegetative period but stabilise our flowering time in this autumn period here. And at the start of the project we were questioning whether we could do it with a slower developing spring wheat, but the real advantage of the winter wheats is that they've got that really broad sowing window, and that looks like it's going to be a really key attribute for grower adoption. So that was kind of our hypothesis. So we set up a bunch of experiments using near isogenic lines of wheat developed by Ben Travaskis at CSIRO. So backcross 5, 97% genetically identical in theory, with major development genes crossed in. So we essentially had at all sites four different genotypes. We had a midwinter wheat, which is more like a Northern American or a European winter wheat with photo period sensitivity, so it's quite slow developing. We have what we call a fast winter wheat, which is photo period insensitive, but still has that winter habit. But once it gets to double ridge, once it vernalises, it's very fast to flower. And then we also had a very slow spring, which is photo period sensitive, and our control, effectively, which is a fast spring, which was the near isogenic line background of Sun State, cultivar Sun State. So we put these out at 24 different site years at these sites across the cropping belt, across the wheat belt of Australia, at multiple times of sowings, somewhere between 2 and 4 times of sowing. Most had 3 to 4. And just looking at yield, the sites fell out into 3 different groups, which I'll talk briefly about in terms of their results. So the lower rainfall Mediterranean environments, where you have quite a early optimal flowering period, quite a hot summer and a hot spring, we found that across the sowing dates, so all the yield, the data are expressed relative to the optimal sowing date for the fast spring, which is here, we found that the springs did what we knew that they did, that they only had a very narrow sort of sowing window, and if you sowed them too early, you started to lose yield. And sowing them too late, you definitely lost yield. But we found that our fast winter wheat could maintain yield and even yield significantly more than our fast spring control sown at its optimum time, well back 30, 40 days prior to the optimal sowing date for our fast spring, so our current control. In the higher rainfall temperate environments, it was a similar story, but we really needed our mid-winter wheat, so the wheat with the photoperiod sensitivity. So our spring wheat's here. This is our optimal sowing period for it, but the mid-winter wheat could really maintain its yield back into those early sowing times that we were looking to use. It couldn't actually yield significantly more than the fast spring wheat sown at its optimal time, but its yield was at least the same, and it was certainly yielding a lot more than the fast spring wheat sown too early. Subtropical environments, there was no benefit to sowing early or using different germplasm at all. They're too warm for the winter wheats to vernalise, so they were a disaster, and there was really no advantage to the very slow spring wheat. There was, nothing was better than just sowing a spring wheat at its optimal time, and because there's rainfall is summer dominant, you're not coming out of cool, wet and into dry. You're actually coming out of cool, dry and into wet, so the flowering time's not so critical. So that was all very promising, but the next thing we wanted to look at is how that would fit into a farming system, a wheat sowing program. So my colleague Julianne Lilly set up a large crop simulation with sites across the Australian wheat belt down here, and assumed a wheat sowing program of about 20 days, because that's really the key issue on farms, is that farms are getting bigger and bigger, and the time it takes to sow a program of wheat is now quite significant, even with increases in machinery capacity. So we assumed that it took 20 days to plant the wheat crop, and we looked at two different strategies, one of which was the current practice of sowing a fast spring wheat from early May, when there was seedbed moisture, dry sowing, or dusting it in, as I've learned it's called in the Pacific Northwest, if there was no moisture. And then we compared our early sowing system, where we had winter wheats, so fast or mid-winter wheats, depending on the environment, and we could sow them opportunistically from the 15th of March, whenever there was seedbed moisture, so whenever we got a sowing opportunity. But if we didn't get a sowing opportunity, we would just revert to what we knew to be best practice, which was our fast spring wheats. So this graph here shows the yield benefit of the early sowing system compared to the current practice across the wheat belt. And they're your classic box plots with that line's the median, and this dot is the mean. And across most of the wheat belt, so Western Australia through South Australia, into Victoria and New South Wales, there was a reasonably large benefit on average to a wheat program. There was obviously a bit of variability, but it often, it was rare that it was a worse thing to do than current strategy. Whereas these sites are in the north, where our experiments also told us that it wasn't worth pursuing. Yeah. So that was all great, and if you applied that across the wheat belt in the regions where it made sense to do, it gave us a 0.6 of a tonne per hectare national yield benefit, which is around 20-25% on our normal wheat yield, which is significant. So that's great, that's very exciting, that's transformational. The problem is we got no cultivars to do it with, because no one's been breeding winter wheats. So we started talking to wheat breeders, and they were, maybe that's interesting. But then AGT, the breeders from AGT, which is Australia's biggest wheat company, gave me a call and said, "We got one for you. We made it by accident. It was a spring-by-spring cross where the vernalisation genes just happened to line up, and it produced a winter wheat." And they didn't realise it was a winter wheat. It stayed in their spring wheat program and did very well for itself in there. And so they had this line, RAC2341, which we could start using in trials, and it was very exciting because it behaved exactly like that fast winter wheat that we wanted, how we wanted it to behave, and we put it out in trials in 2015. And the other exciting thing about it was that it's highly related to the leading Australian spring wheat cultivar. It's almost a near isogenic line, so we could do some really neat experiments, and sown early, it could certainly flower at the right time in this environment and outperform it in terms of yield. And so Bonnie Johnson, my PhD student, took it into even more trials and could really demonstrate that it did have this extremely stable flowering date conferred by that winter habit. So the fast winter lines here with the solid circles, this shaded bit here is the optimal flowering date for this environment, Tamora, and these are different sowing dates. And so you can see that across a broad range of sowing dates, it could consistently land in that optimal period and between seasons. And it was doing a much better job of that than the current practice, which is our fast spring wheat here, that if you pushed it too early, really bolted and would get whacked by frost. So that was very exciting. And that cultivar has now gone into its first year of bulk up. So here is, it's really the first winter wheat adapted to the low rainfall zones of Australia. And here it is, this farmer Lee Bryan at Swan Hill in the low rainfall zone. He's got it replicated in strips. He's on controlled traffic, so he can sort of do a paddock scale trial with it. And provided it meets quality standards, it will be released next year. So hopefully it's going to make a real difference. That sort of genetics by management package is going to make a real difference to grain growers in the coming years. So the next question, and why I was very interested to come to the US and meet and with Bill and others, is can we sort of take this one step further and remove our reliance on that April-May rainfall that we are getting less and less of, and actually start using stored soil water, either from summer fallow or long fallow, to establish the crops and start looking at this deep planting. So that's kind of the next phase of the experiment, I think, to get our flowering time stabilised. And that's it, Ryan.
Very good, James. Questions?
Bill.
James, how likely is it, how difficult is it to get a stand from your early plant into winter wheat?
It's harder than it is with spring wheat, so it starts to get very hot, so the soil... Yeah, the soil moisture dries out very quickly, and yeah, we really notice it in trials, and also growers that do it, it's difficult. Our coleoptiles shorten, the seed bed dries out faster.
Perhaps
so.
The test ball out of
percentage. We've never had a total failure. The other good thing is with early sowing and with winter wheats, because they tiller, as long as we've got about 30 plants per metre squared, we're fine. We can hit potential yield with 30 plants per metre squared. So there's a big margin for error, fortunately. Yeah. Centaur.
James, often you get the opportunity to actually sow in March and some of the climate have enough rain, and to get it established, then you can carry it through to the original rain, which gets less than this did. What's the probability there? So there are two probabilities.
They're far better than anyone expected because it's such a long period. So it comes out in the modelling. So for the winter wheat, we didn't just assume seed bed moisture. We also said we had to have 25 millimetres, I think, of stored soil water to get it through to winter. And in the modelling, the winter wheat gets sown between 70% and 94% of years or something like that at all locations, even the Mediterranean ones. Because the period is so long, you've effectively got 2 months to plant it, your chances of getting an establishment event are very high.
It's a bit different from very late, like May, which would be normally sowing, it's still
the way
you want to
have it. So it's up usually at the end of April, start of May, is where the sowing window for the winter wheat cuts out, and you have to switch to the... Drew?
The wheat sowing is kind of interesting. Does your wheat spectrum shift when you go to that earlier sowing time? So, it might help for weed control in more standard practices. I'm just curious if you've seen any shifts.
Yeah, it can be a good thing and it can be a bad thing. So, it can be a good thing because if you get a good stand very early and our kind of late emerging ryegrass and brome grass. The wheat crops up and competing before they get up, but the winter wheat's less competitive than our spring wheat. So if you put it into a dirty paddock or you don't get the weed control right, it can get more messy than a spring wheat crop. So yeah, there's definitely interactions. Gary.
James, reliance on fertilisation problem, the warming climate. I know some people don't believe it.
need to, if it gets warmer, are you getting into a problem of reliance on mineralisation?
It's easy to meet seems to be the answer. So these are two very contrasting years. So 2015 was about average, slightly cooler than average at Temora, whereas 2016 was record warm year, and it was extremely stable. So you can see the spring wheat fell to pieces, whereas the winter wheat was more stable again than the spring wheat. So we think maybe in marginal environments, so if you're pushing up into the northern wheat belt of Western Australia, that could become a problem, but in most of our cool southern environments, it won't be a problem, I don't think.
Thank you.